Welcome to She Knows, hosted by Brandon Burns, another show from Torched Productions. This is the show where we tell the stories of amazing women doing amazing things. We share stories of adversity, success, leading as a woman, overcoming challenges with gender, stereotypes, and role models for women all over the world. Tune in to walk away with at least one key insight every episode that will help you on your journey. Let's get down to the show, and if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and review us on all your favorite platforms and visit us at gettorched.com. Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of She Knows, our brand new show, which is focusing on amazing women doing amazing things. And today is no exception. I've got an amazing woman on the line. She is doing several things, and I had the pleasure of interacting with her at Creative Cubes, where we have our studio, through Toby Skovrom, the man in charge there. And I saw one of her episodes appearing on their show, and was really interested and keen to hear more about what she does in a day, and more importantly, for her to come on our show and share her journey. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, and then we're recording on SpeakerView, so this is going to flick back, and you'll be able to see her for the very first time. So she is a wellness consultant at Drake Wellness Hub. She's a founder at Play Like a Girl Australia. She's a VFLW player at the Port Melbourne Football Club. She's also studied at Harvard, and she spent time working with and collaborating at the AFL as a development manager. It's Holly Bailey. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Woo! Good to have you on the show, and glad you could be one of our very first guests.
My absolute pleasure.
And I know it's kind of weird because we intended to do this in studio, but we've had to sort of pull the trigger and start the show virtually. Tell us a little bit about where you're bunkered down today and how you're getting through.
Yeah, for sure. We do have to be adaptable at the moment, don't we? I am currently in Port Melbourne. That's where I live. I work from home in my spare room here. I'd worked from home prior to COVID and for the last couple of years. So in terms of how I work, it hasn't changed too much, but it definitely takes away the choice around where I work and how I set up my day. So that's probably the only thing, but I live in a nice house and I've got lots of work, so I don't have too much to complain about.
And so good coffee isn't far away, like it's within 5Ks?
So much good coffee. So close. and like a pub on every corner. Like, we're not short of anything that we need around here within the Port Melbourne bubble.
Holly Bailey, what is your go-to coffee order?
I have an almond latte.
Almond latte, nice. Talk to us about the switch. Were you a dairy consumer that's been converted?
I was. I used to be a skinny latte, and then I was a soy latte, and now I'm an almond latte. So
wow.
Mixed bag.
Maybe you
like to keep a bit of variety. I like to mix things up. I'm not against the others. It's just almond latte is my flavour right now.
Very cool. I love it. So one thing we asked our guests at the very top of this show is to get an insight into what a day in the life looks like. And obviously things have changed, and I'm keen to hear from you, given not much has from a working perspective, given that you sort of self-motivate and you power through from home, but you probably haven't been able to get out and visit clients as much, and you seem to be quite a social and person who likes to interact with others. Talk to us about maybe what's a typical day look like for you, an optimum day, and what are some things that you've had to change, or maybe one or two things you've adapted that have actually served you surprisingly well?
For sure. So my thing that I cannot go without doing is my morning routine. If I didn't take time for myself in the morning before everyone wants to hang out and talk and create, then I don't think that I would still be sane. My morning routine is the time of the day that I get to look after me, and I will wake up early, drink water, go for a walk, journal, meditate, have a good couple of hours to really orientate myself for the day. I've had that for quite a while, so that it for me is a non-negotiable. Then after that is where I'll turn into work mode, and that will be, yeah, you're absolutely right. I would normally be out and about meeting people, face to face, I definitely vibe off the energy of good people and good conversations. So I've had to shift that a little bit. I still make sure that I'm meeting people and networking all the time. Opportunities and great conversations still happen on Zoom. Of course, it's not the same, but I've found that to be something that needs to still happen. Mm-hmm. Things that I've had to implement to make sure that what I'm doing is sustainable is actually taking breaks between meetings and projects. So I can be a stickler for sitting at my computer all day, just powering through, trying to get as much done as I can. However, while I might tick more items off my to-do list, it's often not as the quality might not be there because I'm not giving myself time to think and to create and just to slow down for a second. So being proactive with how I structure my diary is really critical.
Yeah, totally. So I must admit, how do you give in to the temptation of, or maybe what's a strategy you put in place for getting lost in the endless pit of email whilst you're trying to chew off these dedicated tasks?
I absolutely have notifications off. I don't have any pop-ups on anything. I don't have notifications on my phone. I try and be as focused as I can on one particular task while I'm doing it. That's not to say I don't open Outlook constantly. But I do my best to avoid distraction and focus on one thing at a time. And it might be stepping away from my desk and going sitting downstairs and focusing there, or just a change of environment tends to help.
So I mentioned earlier that you studied at Harvard, and I think the course or that you touched on was negotiation mastery. Tell me more about how you studied at Harvard, whether it's remote or in person, and what led you to that particular topic?
For sure. So I studied negotiation mastery at Harvard online program. I was really looking for ways to be able to come into a conversation, a negotiation, I would be able to generate meetings and open up opportunities for myself and with other clients as well. However, when I'd get into the meetings, I was always winging it, for want of a better word. I thought, I thought I'd be doing a good job, or I'd want to move the conversation in a certain direction, but I'd never had any tactical skills around it, or I'd never been taught. And I really wanted to go into a meeting and to be able to direct it and to be able to say the things I wanted to say, and I wanted to be able to have a voice and move things in the direction I wanted them to go. So my evolution, I guess, was being able to open up opportunities, and then I wanted to be able to really use them to the best of my ability. So that's why I wanted to do that program.
So why Harvard, and also what is it about the learning experience that you got to immerse within, even remotely, that makes it so special?
What I loved about it is that we had an opportunity to do a blended learning experience. So we learnt through e-module learning. We learnt through online learning. And then we'd also do practical exercises with other people in the program, and we'd come together and talk about our experiences. Mm-hmm. I love that. So they would set you up with scenarios, and you would be partnered with someone else in the program, and you would need to prepare yourself for a negotiation and then go into a negotiation. So the first one was one you would do via an online chat. The second one was on the phone, and the third one was via Zoom, so face-to-face. So they all got a little bit more complex and a little bit more detailed, and you had no idea what information the other person had. So it was really fun, actually. Also stressful, but it was good motivation to research and really get into it.
I love hearing that, and I've paid close attention to Masterclass recently, and there's a guy who I've read a bit of his book, Chris Voss. Have you heard of him? He's got a book called Never Meet in the Middle.
Mm.
And, being an ex-FBI hostage negotiator. Oh, you just read it. There you go.
I just got a recommendation for that. I was thinking, what? How do I know Chris Voss? I just read your book.
I just read your book. How cool is that? It doesn't matter who the author really is because the content's so good. But that's awesome to hear the point you made around being in the room, not a problem getting in there and making it happen, but then being able to direct the conversation, have a voice, and get an outcome for yourself. I think that's incredibly important for a lot of people at the moment who are starting a business, or potentially you're in a business that is struggling a tad, and maybe they don't have the confidence or it doesn't feel right to some people to really start hustling and try and get themselves into more rooms, whether they be virtual. So I was going to ask you whilst we're on that point, Holly. Let's say that Holly, after doing this course, is heading into a room and you can pick the topic. Just tell me an example of maybe one key thing you're able to do after having done that learning that enabled you to get a better outcome for yourself and really feel like, wow, this works.
Awesome. May I have more than one point?
Yeah.
Great. I thought that's going to be way too hard because I got so much out of it, but I'll try and narrow it down briefly for you. So number one, the biggest learning I got was be prepared. I was absolutely not the smartest person in that group by any means, by a long stretch. However, on more than one occasion, I was more prepared. So I got a really good outcome. I'd spent more time prior to the conversation thinking about all the different scenarios that might come up. I knew it really well. I knew some things that I wanted to say. It gave me more opportunity to anticipate what they were going to say. So that preparation, absolutely key. Most people don't prepare. It might be 5 minutes that you take. If you take a little bit longer, even better, but prep was one major thing. Number two, and more validating than a complete revelation, but to really trust that what you get intuitively in a negotiation. It's a conversation between two people. It's not you versus me. We are hopefully after a positive outcome that's beneficial for both of us. So seeing it as a collaborative conversation rather than I am here against you, it's a shift that is really important. And being able to read the room, I think I'll own it for myself, if I notice something or something feels a bit clunky, to just acknowledge it and trust that intuition that I get, that download that I get, or that hit of intuition that I get, trust it, go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that. Excellent. All right. So I want you to think back for me maybe as early as you can. This could be people that were really close to you, potentially in a family friend way. And there may have even been some people also from a distance who you admired, but I'd love to start hearing about who were some of your role models as you grew up.
As a kid, I loved Sherelle McMahon. She is a netballer, absolute gun, really sharp, focused, competitive, loved watching her play. I also grew up in a family of very passionate Essendon supporters. So James Hird was the epitome of an athlete. Yeah, we absolutely loved Herdy and Matty Lloyd. So they were, in a sports context, they were people that I really admired.
So when you look at, because this is a good point, right, because you're a VFLW player, right, so you played football at a high level, did it occur to you as a child when you were looking up to a male football idol that you'd like to play? And did you ever think that you'd be able to, and that people like you now would be looking up to a female role model?
It never occurred to me that my role models in football were men. I never thought of it like that. Well, I would just go. I grew up with my dad and my brother, so I grew up in a boys' world. That was the norm.
Yep.
So going to the cricket club or going to the footy club, it would be normal to be surrounded by boys, and me being out there kicking the footy or throwing a ball would be, that was what I was kind of used to. Yep. I've never thought about it really. It's only now in hindsight I go, wow, all my football, you know, all of those role models were men. Give that question to me again.
Well, what I'm trying to work out is, you know, I saw an article today around Lauren Jackson as an example, being named as one of the top 25 WNBA players of all time. And I remember when I was younger and she was like probably the only one I could name or think of that was playing that sport professionally. And then she kind of broke it open. And then I'm just thinking back, imagining you as a young child, and there was no women's football around. So it was like, you mentioned a netballer, Sherelle McMahon, which is quite interesting, and that's obviously a professional in a certain sport, but I wonder what difference maybe it would have made for you if AFLW had been around then. Do you think you would have been more into following an idol in AFLW, or do you think you still would have loved your Hurdy and Lloydy?
I don't think I had a choice about the Hurdy and Lloydy. I think that was in the Bailey blood, so that was always going to happen. However, I'd love to share this, actually, because I've been doing a whole lot of research myself around different female athletes because we've got a program coming up. So I wanted to be able to tell great stories and learn more about female athletes that are around and have done great things. God, it brings me to tears looking at it. And I've thought the same thing. Had I known that there were women actually out there doing it, football did exist when I was a kid, but I didn't know it had no visibility. I didn't know that that was a possibility. So had it been, had I known that that was an option for me, absolutely, I probably would have looked to that as a way to move forward or as a sport to play. Sherelle McMahon was the only person that I could think of that I remember as a girl that I aspired to be like. It was all the boys, you know, even in cricket, like I loved Ricky Ponting and I loved the War Brothers, and it was just, they were all I saw on TV and all I knew. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's really interesting to think that these women were out there doing great things. There was this Michelle Timms. She was the first woman to play WNBA. Yeah, yeah, learning about her story, my height, so I loved it. And she, you know, there's women been doing amazing things forever, but the visibility and the spotlight hasn't been there. And, I would have loved to have known that as a kid. It would have given me something to aspire to for sure.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, you've obviously come from a big sporting family with not just football being a real passion of yours, but it sounds like you've played multiple sports. If that is the case, then talk to me about why you landed on pursuing AFL over, say, netball or basketball, some of these more established codes.
I grew up playing netball. That was my first mm-hmm. love, I guess. I mean, I played every sport I could get my hands on when I was a kid. Any school sports, anything I could do, I'd be playing. But when I first played netball, I fell in love with it. I loved everything about it. I loved playing. I loved practicing. I loved training. It became my entire world. I would play netball every night of the week, as many games on the weekend as I could. And I only now appreciate so much my dad that would drive around the countryside taking me to all the games. He is a tough guy, but he is a big marshmallow, so he wouldn't be able to say no to me. So I would be playing 5, 6, 7 games a week. I don't even know so many. So netball was my sport until I was probably early 20s, maybe mid 20s. Hadn't thought about playing footy. I think I played one game I played one game in year 7 at school, and then I'd play school footy and I'd be a little terrier out there and usually cause some trouble, but never really thought about playing outside of school. And then I think I got to about 27.
Yeah.
And I thought that's when AFLW had now, it was now in the spotlight, it was available. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I don't try now, there's a clock that I might miss. So I'm going to have a go at footy and went and play. I played netball and footy my first year that I moved across to football, and it was pretty tough on the body, and I was a bit tired to try and do both. So the next year I thought, I'm going to go all in on footy. I've been a good netballer for a long time now, and I loved it. And I was sort of looking for a new challenge, and AFL was to be the one.
So what's the one thing about crossing over from netball to football that people wouldn't realise is actually a really good crossover?
Two things. One, what came across really well for me skill-wise, I'm coordinated, so skill-wise it came across with some work, but it came across quite well. However, the game experience and understanding what it's like to be on the field and positioning and finding confidence in knowing my role, that took way longer than I expected, way longer, mm-hmm. years. So mm-hmm. that was unexpected for me. The other thing that I really would love to share is that for quite some time I'd spent time almost suppressing that netballer, pretending that I'm not a netballer anymore. I don't want to be that. I'm a footballer now. However, that skill set is something that I built over 20 years and it was innate to me. And it's actually a tool. It's actually a great thing. And that's why I'm good at football, because I brought that netball background. It's not something that I shouldn't bring. It's something I should definitely bring and use as a tool to build on. And it took me a couple of years to identify that. But once I stopped pretending like I wasn't a netballer and embraced that in my game, it just changed the game, really.
Yeah. Awesome. Tell me about your latest endeavors. Maybe you can touch on Play Like a Girl as well. And then, because I want to sort of start hearing, I want to ask a question about, you know, maybe it's gender-specific challenges that you've faced directly, or maybe you've helped others work through that you've witnessed, that you've really been able to make an impact and that work that you do.
Definitely. So Play Like a Girl was my avenue, I guess, or my vehicle to be able to share what I've learned through my sporting journey and bring those lessons back to young girls coming through now. So I wanted that to be a way that I could go, hey, here's what I've learned that have worked really well. Here's what other people have learned that has worked really well for them, and then put it into a program that we can share with young up and coming female athletes. Mm-hmm. So that was where it started. I thought, God, I think we've all had those moments. God, I wish I knew that when I was a kid. That would have helped me. So that was the reason for starting it. Mm-hmm. Then I had some opportunities. I've got a good network in the sporting space. So I had a whole bunch of opportunities to go out and run those workshops and start speaking to people. And what was amazing about it was that it wouldn't matter what sport it was, because I'd get put into environments where we'd have a whole range of sports that I knew nothing about, like go-karting and skiing and all these sports that girls were elite in that I didn't know about. However, when we got into a room and just talked about some of the things that the barriers or some of the things we run into in terms of challenges from a mindset perspective or pathways, they were all very similar. It didn't matter. When we were in that safe room, people faced the same challenges. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, empowered me to go, hey, this is so much more than just football. This is girls, you know, and how we help them move forward in sport, school life, whatever it is. So at that point, it was workshops here and there for a range of different clients. And then now that has evolved, and Play Like a Girl means so much more than it did to me then. I think a lot of it came from kind of a rebellious place, which is still absolutely within me, you know. Yeah, I play like a girl. I absolutely do. Like, let me show you. So that exists within me. However, what evolved was the most powerful part we have as women and as girls is to play like a girl, like to really embrace that intuitive way of playing and to just play like a kid again. And that's the real goal. So I really like that spin on it. Now we're rolling out a new program, which is an online program that's going to be able to help athletes who are coming up and people who are well down the journey and people who are new to be able to develop some off-field tools that they can use now while we're not able to play, and so that they can keep growing and keep learning and keep getting better while we can't actually all be together.
So who would be an ideal person that would take that up?
Any girls who are playing footy or want to be playing footy, but it's used, this program specifically is girls from around 15 to 19 years old.
Fantastic. Love it. All right. So has there been an instance or situations where you've really been able to play an active role in fixing or picking up on a gender-specific challenge and turning it around, or really helping someone going through that process?
Definitely. I've had those moments myself where I've been in a situation where something hasn't been quite right, or I'll go into the one that I thought of first, and it's happening now, and something I'm really, really passionate about changing is that the football concept or what's being created in the AFLW, VFLW is based on what it has been for the men for the last 100 or so years. They'll take that structure and just go, here, let's create the same structure for the women. Mm-hmm. women are not the same. We will thrive in a different environment, or we have an opportunity to create a really high performance environment, not just from a playing skills perspective, but from a wellness, mental health perspective, and having more conversations around how we help each other to get better. And I think that we just have a real opportunity to recreate. We don't have to use what's been done forever. Women will, I remember one club that I played at, we'd had a coach that had never coached women before. And he was very aggressive in the way that he would communicate, not intentionally. I don't think that he meant to be aggressive toward anyone. However, when he would yell and really very directive, and there were a lot of women that were very uncomfortable in that environment, wasn't appropriate. And I think that there needs to be conversations had about how we get the best out of who we have in the room and in our clubs and in our teams, and providing the environment that supports them in getting better.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine you in one of these sessions getting yelled at. I reckon you'd be the type to yell back and say, "Hey, that's enough."
I was fine with it. It doesn't affect, because I knew what it was like. I would just go, "Yeah, cool, sweet." It would kind of work for me. But I could. What made me uncomfortable was that I'd see other girls tearing up, or I'd see other girls really go into their shell because of it, and that authority figure being so aggressive for it just is really inappropriate. And for me, fine. For the girls, it was never going to work, especially at it was the grassroots level. It wasn't going to be, it's just different, you know, read the room.
Yeah, totally. So now that you've become the person you are and you've been able to develop out all these initiatives and sort of, you know, you've become a real authority figure in your space, whether you probably acknowledge it or not, because of how far you've been able to evolve how you can help people in this space. There's people coming through for the first time now that are probably you 10, 15 years earlier. There's got to be a couple of things still that really bug you as something that you don't understand why they haven't been changed, or maybe that you're working hard on to do, because you just know that if you can change that, it's going to get way better.
So many. Where do I start? I'll pick a couple. So how is this? We have girls at a semi-professional level who are still needing to pay fees to play. However, the men's team are getting paid to play, but the girls can't get any help with sponsorship, right? So there's this whole concept that there's no money in women's sport. That's why we can't pay them, or that's why we can't get them sponsorship. We can't get them sponsors. It's not true. There are so many people who really want to invest in women and really want to support them. There's not someone who's dedicated going, "Hey, we need $500 as a player sponsorship for this one girl." There are so many people that would be so up for that. However, it's not that it doesn't exist. It's that no one's actually doing it. Mm-hmm. So it's just baffling to me that there's girls at playing at that level that are still needing to pay to play. I mean, there's so much in this. I could go on such a rant, but we need to create, if it's an elite environment or a semi-elite environment, we need to provide them with the environment that allows them to thrive. And that means, what if we paid them a salary to play? Mm-hmm. And actually dedicate their time to playing the sport and doing everything that they need to, so that the sport and they can develop. It's like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, hearing that makes me think, I can see how you could create a marketplace where people could sponsor a female athlete or a AFL, VFLW player, maybe even one playing at suburb level, but it's more about the specific individual as to why someone wants to sponsor and less about what level. And I can see a lot of businesses would like to sponsor a mum or a professional woman or someone who's doing it all like that, because they're such a great role model, just not on the football field.
There's just no visibility and there's no, people just don't know. I think if you give people the opportunity to contribute, then they'd love to. There's so much that, you know, even around the girls are still having to wear men's uniforms and stuff like that. You know, the fit is wrong. It's uncomfortable. It's clearly made for boys and men. And then we need to, yeah, it's just not, it's not made for women yet.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's investment and it takes time to create those things. Around uniform, I'd love to see that fixed, but the environment of, you know, having more inclusive clubs where there's a female toilet or a female shower and we're not in where with the urinals and things like that, you know.
No one wants to be in there.
No one wants to be in there, no.
So what about like, so on the flip side of that, there must be things that have changed recently that maybe even happen sooner than you thought because of the momentum and the great work you and others have done that's really made you feel proud. What's maybe one of those achievements?
I think the number of girls that want to play, because mm-hmm. now it does have visibility and now it's on TV for us to watch. There are, like, the growth in sport at a grassroots level for females is so high. There are so hundreds and hundreds of girls around the country that now don't know any different, that just that play because they love to and they never knew that if they couldn't. I think that is just so exceptional. And there are a lot of people who are passionate about doing work like me, who are wanting to tell stories of female athletes exactly like you, which is exactly what we need to be doing. The stories are there and they have been doing this for years. We just haven't had the visibility or the people that are really wanting to go out there and drive it. And that makes me proud, going, well, what can we do now? There are people doing incredible things. You know, this girl can, and there are a lot more initiatives now available for women that simply open up pathways or put more of a spotlight on great people.
Awesome. What are your biggest fears, or is your biggest fear?
One of my biggest fears is not being able to perform or deliver. So, you know, my metaphors always go to sport first, but they play out in business and life. But, you know, having done all the work and being and having worked on my skills and put in all the preparation and then get to game day and not be able to put it out in the park, I guess. So, yeah. And then in business, I do all the work and work really hard. I want to be able to get there on game day or show day or whatever it is, and I want to be able to deliver really great content, or I want to be able to deliver something that's really transformational and impactful. My fear is not being able to do that to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm. So that's comprehensive. What about, is it like sharks or snakes or?
I go deep every time. I'm terrified of spiders. I got terrorized as a kid by my dad and my brother with spiders, and now I am, I don't even want to be in a car or in a room or anywhere where one has been. It's so stressful.
Who's your favourite AFLW player and favourite overall female athlete?
AFLW, I love Tyler Hanks from Melbourne. Hanksy, she's such a little gun. Overall, female, it's still Sherelle. I love her. I think she's brilliant and she's doing great work in sport now. There's so many.
Is she coaching or is she still involved with the Vixens?
I think she does media work for the Vixens.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. So you mentioned earlier your preparation. You mentioned your morning routine. Can we get an insight into some more of your, I guess, secrets to success that can be both from a daily perspective and maybe from like a more longer looking perspective?
Definitely, yeah. So morning routine is a big one, just taking that time for self first before going out into the world, that's significant, as well as preparing. Yeah, I guess I've kind of touched on them, preparing really well for what's to come. The secrets to success massively is around focus. I think that we all have fears and we all have challenges and we all face things along the journey, whatever it is we're going for. And we don't have to change anything or fix anything. We just need to focus on the things that really matter. So I spend a lot of time day and night, or not a lot of time, I spend some time day and night going, okay, well, where's my focus today? Is it on all the things I'm scared about, or is it on all the things that I'd love to do? So a switch of focus has been a significant lesson for me, and something that it's a secret to success for sure.
Yeah, I love it. Awesome. Okay, so you mentioned meditation earlier, which is like, I've done a lot of research on Tim Ferriss, and he reckons over 80% of his guests all meditate. So that's like a no-brainer. But is it like a particular type of meditation or a particular type of, mindfulness exercise that really works for you personally?
I used to be a meditator. I knew that I wanted to be a meditator, and I am a all-in kind of gal. So I went to a meditation retreat a few years ago where it was a 7-day silence retreat where you do 4 sittings of an hour and a half a day. So I don't learn by just dipping my toe. It's like throw yourself in. And ever since then, I've sat every single morning. I just got so much out of it. So some days it might be 10 minutes. It might be 5 the next day, and it might be half an hour, but I'll use an app called Insight Timer. So it gives you different styles, different time. I really like that. I don't have one practice that I use. I use multiple, but there are some that if I'm feeling especially wound up or there's indecision, I've got one particular meditation that will just help me to acknowledge what's going on. It just, it's a little bit more direct than some of the other ones when I'm just looking for a nice uplift and a bit of stillness.
What's the secret talent that you have that maybe only you and some really close to you know that you have?
I think this is a hard question. What I came up with was a really good friend of mine. I asked her this question and she said, you could make friends with a brick wall. And I thought, okay, I mean, I haven't thought of myself like that, but sure, like I love people and learning about them, and I guess that's a skill set.
I love that. That could be the title of this episode, Making awesome. Friends with a Brick Wall.
Awesome.
If you had to put a quote on a billboard, what would it be?
Oh, did you see the quote that I sent through that was about a gazillion pages long?
Oh, correct. It was a poem, wasn't it?
Poem.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to share that in the transcript of the show. But do you want to share a bit of it with us and tell us the context?
Yeah, I can. It's basically, it's called Our Deepest Fear. And the essence of it is that why not us? Like, why not you? If you've got something to go for, why not you? Like, we all have uniqueness to bring to the world, and us playing small does not serve the world. We've all got things to bring. So the essence of the message is why not you?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Excellent. So how can we as an audience and as a fan base not just check you out, but how can we collaborate? How can we get involved? How can we dig a little bit deeper to really go on the journey with you?
Awesome. You can find me at playlikeagirlaustralia.com. We've got a program coming up next month called Play to Win, which is our flagship program. You can absolutely get involved in that if you're a girl wanting to develop some off-field skills while we're not on field at the minute. We also run workshops, keynote, a whole bunch of different high-performing teams workshops. So you can get us there. And we're on Facebook as well as the same thing, Play Like a Girl Australia. And my name's Holly Bailey. You can get me at hollybailey.com. That's it. I'm all over the place.
She's a pro. Well, I've been saying to every guest, and we've had this chat already, but for our audience listening, this is just part one. So part two, and what we always intended to do with Holly was to get her into studio. And she's Melbourne-based, so that means, fingers crossed, as soon as we get the green light, we want to get her into studio. And we'll dig a bit deeper and do this in person and really dive into those areas that she's an expert in. So between now and then, when you're hearing this, interact with us on our socials and tell us what questions maybe you'd like us to ask in the next version of She Knows with Holly Bailey. Anything else to add before we wrap up today?
I just feel really grateful to be on here with you. And when you were talking about women who are out there doing great things, I was just like, yes, I'm so proud to be in that group of people. So thank you for having me as a guest. I appreciate it.
Pleasure, Holly. Can't wait to do it again.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of She Knows. If you loved what you heard, then do us a favor and review and subscribe to us on all your favorite platforms. To get in touch, head to gettorched.com and see you on the next episode.